If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome one and all to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, March 17th, 2022. I am your returning host, Tamor Hussein, joined by my brother from another mother, Tim Gettys.
Tim Tam Thursdays, baby. They're back in full effect.
It's been a while. How you been, Tim?
So good, man. So good. Can't wait to talk about the news with you today. Especially excited about the Supermassive stuff. So let's get into it.
Before we get into it, though, Tim, you know I have a rotating or a regular segment, which is just reminding people the importance of the day that I am hosting. That is, of course, the 17th. We have some birthday shout-outs. We want to shout out Kurt Russell.
Hell yeah, we do.
Happy birthday to Kurt Russell. Another kind of funny best friend, Gary Sinise, another actor.
Gary Sinise, I can't say I'm familiar off the top of my...
Gary Sinise is a name that I know. I believe he is in the adaptation of, what's it called? Of Mice and Men?
Of Mice and Men, okay.
And he's also in one of the Law and Orders or like...
CSI
or something like
people
one of them.
People are saying he's Lieutenant Dan as well in...
Whoa, he is Lieutenant Dan.
Why am I blanking on the name of that movie?
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. Yeah. That's right. Also, my homie, English actor John Boyega. Let's go, baby.
Oh, shit. I love him, man.
I wish he was my homie. That would be fun.
I wish that he was in more things in recent times. Like, I want more of him. He deserves more of a... We need a Boyega sans.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll get it soon. I think all of the Star Wars kids needed like a little bit of time, you know, to like just like simmer down from the Star Wars stuff, because we're seeing that a little bit with Oscar Isaac. He's coming back in a big way. I think we'll, you know, Daisy Ridley is doing like artsy stuff, right? And I think we'll get John Boyega back in a big way.
Well, the tricky thing with John Boyega was he popped off at Hollywood for Star Wars, right? So like potentially burned some bridges for the right reasons,
right.
But like, who knows what he's come back
with. But like in like smaller, also like artsy stuff that like maybe we get him into like, you know, he'll have his like Uncut Gems moment and stuff like that. Reason like some really great like films kind of shit. Or, you know, you could just rewatch Attack the Block, which is fucking awesome.
Attack the Block's great. In 1762, on this day, the first parade for St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, was held by Irish soldiers serving in the British Army in New York City. So St. Patrick's Day parade.
Never thought of St. Patrick as a person.
No, you know, he is. It was amazing.
More as a day, an idea, but not a man.
I feel like St. Patrick's parades have been happening nonstop since last week, because I was going from San Francisco to Oakland in a lift with one Lucy James Games, and it took us genuinely an hour because everywhere was closed. And everywhere we went, I could hear music, like Irish-themed music. And the amazing thing was we eventually found the source of this music, and it was one small Irish pub. Which I don't know, just absolutely killing it. Like, they either got the loudest sound system ever or figured out the acoustics of San Francisco.
There was a parade last weekend as well. I think that the city like wanted to do a parade like the weekend before rather than the weekend after. So there was also like a, because we had friends coming to our place from across the city, and they had to like kind of track down of like, okay, where's the parade at now, so we don't like hit it at all. So
Yeah, it's wild. But yeah, today's the anniversary of the first time. In 1973, after it was released, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon album stayed on the Billboard 200 charts for 736 weeks.
Fuck yeah.
The most consecutive number of weeks any album was ever on that chart. at that
you know,
point.
I think about that album often, and honestly, I think about it in connection with that fact of like how big of a hit this was for that duration of time. For something that technical and that kind of like deep musically, I'm just so surprised that there was ever a moment in time that like that was the type of music that was appreciated on the Billboard charts in this way. Like, that's really, really impressive. I mean, I do guess. And it just stayed on the Billboard Top 200. It's not necessarily high on it, but still, that's really cool.
The best thing about Eternals is when it opened up with Time. Like, that was so fucking good.
It holds up as well, so you could listen to it today, and it's like great.
So good.
In 2012, sorry, the number one hit on March 17th, 2012, goddamn, was Fun, featuring Janelle Monáe. We Are Young. Never heard it.
And I'm going to say it. Banger and a half. Like, this is one of those songs that people are going to be like, I fucking hate it. It's a commercial song. Yeah, it's one of the greatest commercial songs of our generation, man. You can put that thing under an Old Navy commercial. You can put that thing under a WrestleMania commercial, and it's going to get me just as hyped.
I
remember
I was a junior in high school, and the senior class, so I was, like, friends with a lot of them because I was in drama club, so there's a lot of, like, different grades, like, coming together as friends, and they wanted to use that as their, like, graduating song, but then, of course, there's, like, you know, the verse is about, like, you know, like, beating people and stuff. And it was like, So I remember they had to, like, walk down to a very awkward, like, cut version of that song, which was really weird.
I love that. In elementary school, we all had to sing a song to leave. Elementary school's weird, right?
Yeah, no, like, we did that shit, I guess, too,
the fifth,
Tim.
Yeah, the fifth graders are going to do this, like, a performance now. And we got to vote on what the song was, and we all voted for Bye 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 by NSYNC. Because we're like, yeah, we're saying bye. And all the parents are like, the lyrics of this song are not about fifth graders moving on to middle school. We killed it, though. We fucking killed it.
There's a song by Judena called Safari, which is like, it's got Janelle Monáe as like a featured artist on it. She literally comes in and says like three words, just Safari, and like leaves. And it's like incredible. It's really good. Anyways, today's stories include a new game from Until Dawn developer Supermassive, the Halo TV show reviews, the release date for Netflix's Resident Evil series, and GoldenEye potentially making a return, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can also use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite. You may have heard of Fortnite as the game in Elden Ring. You might have seen it mentioned there a few times. And that will help support the channel. Very easy to do. To be part of the show, you can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, I mean, goddamn, one time let it be a bad game of sweeping. A new Kind of Funny Games cast is up right now, and it is the long-awaited Tunic review. Andy and Janet played it, and they're joined by Greg and Blessing to talk about it, and it's great. The game and the podcast. You can check that out on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. And speaking of Gamescast, review season is... Gamescast. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, I'm getting semantic satiation from the word Gamescast. Review season is still in overdrive. And next week there will be two review Gamecasts dropping. Keep your eyes on the feeds and the fingers on the bell so you can get notified when they go live. There's also two new Mario Kart 8 Deluxe DLC drops at some point soon when Nintendo deigns it us worthy to have them. So make sure you join us tomorrow right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames after Games Daily to watch Barrett and Tim play the new cups for the very first time. And there's going to be some multiplayer goodness too. And now we've got a shout out. Tim, do you want to give us a shout out?
I do. I would love to give a shout out to the homie Raven Simone, aka Bob Dunga. Baron, if you could bring up this tweet, that'd be super cool. We had her on the Gamescast a couple months ago to talk about one of the Lost Games in Media projects that she worked on. She does these super dope in-depth documentary looks into things, and she made a new documentary about the history of Sailor Moon and how it was westernized and all this stuff, and it's really good, it's really cool, and a ton of cool people that you know made small cameos, including myself. I voice a character, and it was pretty cool, and I appreciate being a small part of this, so thank you for that, Raven.
GameSpot and Kind of Funny co-host Lucy Jane also voices a voice in there. I did ask to voice
surprises.
I was like, let me voice one of the sailors. And she was like, no, absolutely not.
No, no.
No, I didn't ask. But imagine my voice coming out of a young anime girl. You don't want that shit. Nobody wants that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon Maguire, Fargo Brady, and Pranksy. And today we are brought to you by MeUndies and DoorDash, but we'll tell you about that more later. For now, let's begin with what is and will forever be the Roper Report. It is time for some video game news. We've got four stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Thank you, CEO Junior Barrett. Until Dawn developer Supermassive has released a new game, and it is announced a new game. It is called The Quarry. 2K and Supermassive Games has announced The Quarry, a new teen horror narrative game where your every choice, big or small, shapes your story and determines who lives in the to tell the tale. Featuring an iconic ensemble cast of Hollywood stars and celebrities, including David Arquette from the Scream franchise. Check out Scream and Review. Perfect timing. Ariel Winter from Modern Family.
Hell yeah.
Justice Smith from Jurassic World.
And Detective Pikachu, let's go. And
Detective Pikachu. Brenda Song from Dollface.
Woo!
Okay, love to see that.
And Sweet Brenda. Life of Zack and Cody.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah, okay, of course. Of course. Lance Henriksen from Aliens.
There we go.
And Lin Shaye from A Nightmare on Elm Street. And more.
Ethan Suplee.
What?
Ethan Suplee is in this. Hold on, Barrett. Can you bring up the link that I put at the top of the doc there?
Give
the
me
top
a
of the news story.
Tim wants to supplement.
This is amazing. They have a website for the quarrygame.2k.com where you can go, and it has like little bios kind of each of the characters. If you scroll down a little bit, yeah. Can you hit the bottom middle guy with the hat? Ethan fucking Suplee, looking like
shit.
An Adonis.
Looking I didn't even recognize. Like, he shows up in the trailer, and I didn't even recognize him. Holy shit.
Yeah, man.
That's wild.
If y'all don't remember who this is the bigger dude from Boy Meets World, like the bully's friends, and he lost all of the weight.
I was going to say he's Earl's brother, and my name is Earl, but he's also the guy who can't see the sailboat in Mallrats as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. As the sun sets on the last day of summer camp, the teenage counselors of Hackett's Quarry throw a party to celebrate. No kids, no adults, no rules. Things quickly take a turn for the worse. Hunted by blood-drenched locals and something far more sinister, the teens' party plans unravel into an unpredictable night of horror. Friendly banter and flirtations give way to life-or-death decisions as relationships build or break under the strain of unimaginable choices. Players each of the 9 camp counselors in a thrilling cinematic tale where every choice shapes your unique story from a tangled web of possibilities. Any character can be the star of the show or die before daylight comes. How will your story unfold? This is interesting. So over on GameSpot, Phil Hornshaw did a interview with creative director Will Biles, and he confirms that this is more of a spiritual successor to Until Dawn and an homage to horror movies than anything that they have had before. They've been doing the Dark Pictures anthology since then and hit and miss on those, but this, everyone has been waiting for something to hit like I was about to say Elden Ring. Oh my god.
Of course you were. Of course you were, Tam. You're a broken man. You will never be fixed again. The ring has you under its control.
Oh, even this kid, he's from Righteous Gemstones. He's like the, yeah. This is a cool cast.
Tam, you're never going to hear the end of that. Like, I want you to know. Like, that, like, the Elden Ring should not have been on your mind at all at that moment.
If there's a pause in my speech for off thinking for 1 second, my brain goes, Elden Ring? And I'm just like, oh god, no.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, it says this is more of a spiritual successor to Until Dawn, and this is a quote from that interview we should check out, but it's also from Will Bowers. Says, I'm a really big horror buff, and a lot of it is just absorbed. I really like a lot of director Sam Raimi stuff, and we've got Ted Raimi in the game. Ted Raimi being Sam Raimi's brother.
Dude, that's my thing. Go down second on the. Well, there he goes. Yeah,
there he is. So, yeah,
I was looking through this with Doc Ock and stuff like that in Spider-Man.
Yeah, dude, I was watching the or I was looking at the site before we did the show, and I saw the name Ted Raimi, and I was like thinking in my mind, I'm like, I'm gonna make a dumb joke that it's Sam Raimi's brother, and now you just read this, and it is Sam Raimi's brother. Yeah, yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah. So the quote continues: "There's a little of Evil Dead. There's Friday the 13th, as you can see from the summer camp. There's The Hills Have Eyes. There's a lot of 80s style horror, and we definitely mixed up the eras. So." Whilst it's set in modern era, it's styled around the 80s. And then there's even more retro stuff that goes on with the locals who live near Hackett's Quarry, which is set around the 50s.
Really quick, for any developer who of the quarry that might be watching or listening, Ted Raimi's last name is...
Yeah, his name is spelled wrong.
On your website.
Yeah, you hate to see it. 1 out of 10. The quarry features full performance capture for all its actors, and Supermassive teamed up with Los Angeles special effects company Digital Domain, whose efforts include working on Thanos in Avengers Endgame to enhance the in-game performances. Supermassive's technical approach has evolved through the course of its games pretty clearly, but according to Biles, it's pushing the envelope here to capture more nuance and subtlety in its performance. So that's from our interview with Will Biles. If you want to learn more about the game, you can check that out on GameSpot. There's a bunch of interviews out. IGN has one, I think. There's a few other places that have one. So if you're interested in learning more, hit up Google and you'll find more. How you feeling about this, Tim?
You know, I'm pretty excited. It's weird though. It's a hesitant excited, because I really, really loved Until Dawn, but I do think it was too long for the ideal experience that type of game is. Like, I think that game works best when it is more of a party environment, when you are getting a group of people together, you're kind of enjoying it as a interactive movie almost, and making the choices together, and, you know, kind of like seeing how the story unfolds. But I think when you're doing that over like a 10-hour thing, that doesn't... I never fully finished an Until Dawn playthrough with like my different groups of friends. I did the thing on old G, like Kind of Funny Games YouTube stuff that me and Nick did. Like, we played through it all, but I tried maybe 5 or 6 times with different friends starting it up, be like, yo, y'all are gonna love it, and they did love it. But then it's like, what are we really gonna commit to? Multiple weekends coming back and remembering. Like, I just feel like smaller doses are the solution for this. But then we get the Dark Pictures anthology, which was kind of exactly that, but I feel like the stories that those were telling didn't lend themselves to that kind of group party dynamic that Until Dawn did, with the kind of more teen slasher, you know, kind of 80s, 90s movie inspired storytelling. This looks a lot more in line with that, but it does seem like this is going to be a longer game as well. So I don't know. It's kind of a hard balance for sure, because you want to give people their money's worth. But I do think that the greatest demographic to hit is the people that want to share this with their friends, whether it's on the same couch and at a in a room together, or on things like Twitch and all of that.
Yeah, so this game is 7 to 10 hours long, depending on how many characters survive. But they said it's highly replayable, and it supports 7 players with online co-op as well as couch co-op. And they're kind of evolving the past the controller system that they introduced in the Dark Pictures games. So it feels like they are kind of thinking along the same lines of what you are, what you said there, and trying to create this shorter, more dense experience that you can enjoy with other people. I think this is really interesting, because I'm like excited for this, because I haven't been particularly enamored with the Dark Pictures stuff. It's felt a bit like everyone wants Until Dawn again, and they're finally giving us what seems like an Until Dawn game. And it feels like also that this has been in the works for a really long time, which means they have obviously taken learnings from the stuff that has been going on with Dark Pictures. Dark Pictures has had some highs, but also quite a few like lows and boring moments. So I'm excited to see them take all the learnings from the last few years and put it into something that people really, really are excited for and really wanted. I think there was a little more trepidation around some of the Dark Pictures themes and like aesthetics, and you know, people weren't as sold on it. People just desperately wanted another like teen horror flick thing. Yeah, and we're finally getting it,
and with a great cast. I mean, like, this is so fun. I feel like we have like the kind of iconic horror tropey people like David Arquette, but then also getting people like Brenda Song, which is fun because we got Ashley Tisdale in the last Dark Pictures anthology. So close to getting a reunion there. But the Thanos tech is interesting because watching the trailer, you can definitely see it, right? Like, Thanos is one of the more impressive examples of CG that we've seen kind of in facial animation in history. So kind of applying that tech to this is really cool. However, it does create a very, very weird kind of unnerving look where it's like, that is but isn't David Arquette, you know? It's that uncanny valley, but like kind of a new generation of it in a way.
Yeah.
Although Justin Smith, that looked just like him. That was great.
Yeah, it does. I hope it's cheesy. That's what I want. I want it to be like super, super corny because the problem with some of the Dark Picture stuff was like they tried to make it like genuinely good writing, and it kind of missed the mark for me a lot of times. So I'm hoping that they like lean into the idea of it being like very, very cheesy. And they've got to be, right? Like, if they're citing all those kind of horror movies as their inspiration, they've got to be looking at it and being like, yeah, we got to make this hokey as hell. But yeah, exciting times.
Mm-hmm.
Next story. Halo TV show reviews have started to hit the internet. So the first two episodes of the show have been sent out to various people. We reviewed it at GameSpot. And in our review, Chris Hayner said Halo is a show that shouldn't work in the grand scheme of things. After over 7 years of development, including showrunner, director, and network changes, it's actually surprising that it exists at all. Thankfully, it does, though. What the team behind the show has created is an interesting new way of exploring the Halo franchise. It stands on its own, away from the games, but it's only stronger for it. Now you can have two completely different and well-imagined Halo experiences to immerse yourself in, which is a pretty great thing. So our review, I think, skews on the more positive side. The Hollywood Reporter's Daniel Feinberg said, creators Kyle Klein and Stephen Kane have adapted Halo in a way that basically renders it with the emphasis on basic. It's a clone of The Mandalorian or Sweet Tooth or The Road or Lone Wolf and Cub. Boasts no technological innovations to speak of, a few performances to offer meaningful grounding, and only limited action thrills. Halo is aggressively forgettable, which is at least several steps up from bad. Mm. And then IGN's Jesse Shedin? Apologies if I mispronounced that. Given how integral the massive battles between humanity and the Covenant are to the appeal of the Halo franchise, the lackluster action in the Halo premiere is cause for concern. However, the series gets enough right in this first outing to make up for that shortcoming. As much as the premiere focuses on capturing the iconic weapons and technology from the games, it also shows a willingness to move its story in dramatically different directions. This is hardly a one-to-one adaptation of the games, and that's really the show's biggest selling point right now. And then finally, Collider's Chase Hutchinson says, just as Master Chief is only able to scratch the surface of what happened to him, the show feels like it's only able to uncover the vastness, uncover the vastness of its world. What we see is intriguing and demonstrates how there is a lot of potential for Halo adaptations to thrive where many other forgotten attempts have failed. It mostly succeeded in this regard, with the relationship between Quan and John proving to be the show's saving grace. They offer a hopeful glimpse at a future where they both help each other face off against a universe that is dead set on using them for their own means. Even when everything else around them struggles to come together, they remain the glue that holds it all into place. So, some mixed reviews for Halo. Again, this is based on two episodes, and I did speak to Chris, who wrote our review, and he said the first one's second one is much better, and he was like excited to see more. So what do you take, what's your take on those reviews, and also are you excited for it? Are you gonna watch it? Is it something you're looking for?
I got sent a screener for just the first episode, but I haven't watched it yet because I'm trying to get more, because I want to do a review next week with Mike and Andy The first episode, just as the bigger Halo people on the team. But I'm not excited for it, but I am excited that it exists, and I'm excited about some of the choices that they're making with it. I think the Paramount Plus situation makes it a little bit even lesser of a must-watch kind of thing from the get-go, unless it was something truly special that it doesn't kind of seem to be based on the first two episodes. Like, it getting a 7, like, who was it here? Daniel from Hollywood Reporter saying that at least it's several steps up from bad. It's like, yeah, I think that's kind of where we've been at for a while now when it comes to video game movies and TV properties. Like, we're out of that phase of them just being the absolute worst things in the world. And I bite my tongue on that because I know we do have a story coming up that I'm about to go off on. But I feel like we're at a point where you can adapt game stories or characters or whatever in ways that don't necessarily need to be one-to-one or are one-to-one, but if that makes sense for the genre and the characters, and it can be okay to good. And I feel like we're just waiting for those like truly amazing, great moments. I know people talk about Arcane, and that's a great example, Castlevania on Netflix. Like, we're getting a lot of really, really good stuff. So I think that a 7 these days, as the kind of general consensus-ish, on episodes 1 and 2 isn't quite enough to motivate people that just have casual interest. You know, I feel like if it was getting like a 9, I think that'd get a lot more people like, you know what, I'm gonna do the trial for Paramount Plus, which by the way is a really cheap service. Like, it's not it's not expensive to sign up for that one and be able to watch this show. So we'll see. I'm definitely not hopeful about it. Seeing the trailers and stuff, there's some things I thought they got really right. Like, seeing the CG of the Elite it's incredible. It looks so good. But then seeing the rest of the world, not so much.
Yeah.
And getting another Mandalorian storyline, like, I don't know that that's what I'm looking for from a Halo story. But at the same time, like, I do think that I'd rather them do something different than try to stick to the games, because I don't think the game story works as a TV show.
Lone Wolf and Cub really has become the Dark Souls of TV show adaptations of video games. Like, just everyone's at it. Like, just, why don't we do Lone Wolf and Cub? Okay, cool. I see Snowbike Mike in the chat, and we were talking about Halo and that kind of stuff, and I thought he was doing a review. He was like, oh no, I'm loving it. So happy with what they created. And I was like, oh, I'm glad Mike's enjoying the Halo TV show. And then he went, the snowboarding game I have always wanted and want more now. And I was like, what? Why is Master Chief doing in this TV show?
We're going a little off the book too much.
I'm interested. Like, I'm interested in checking it out, but I probably won't be subscribing to Paramount Plus. And now that CBS has figured out that I am no longer an employee and has taken my Paramount Plus subscription or staff access away, I don't foresee myself subscribing for it. Maybe I'll get lucky and Mike will like it enough that he'll just start buying us all subscriptions, because that's the kind of thing he does, right? but like, I think I'm going to wait until the full season is done and then come back to it, because I do love the Halo universe and I'm excited that they're trying to do something different with it. I'm excited to see them doing more with Chief as a character more than anything. But I think this is one of those shows where it's not like a resounding success from the outset. And like, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of awesome looking Marvel TV shows coming out soon. And I only have a limited amount of time to watch things. And let me tell you, I'm knee deep in rewatching The X-Files. And then I'm going to go into like Moon Knight and Miss Marvel and... There's so much coming out. I mean, so this feels like...
Why don't you just rewatch Daredevil with me, Tam? So let's rewatch Daredevil. Ooh. It's on Disney Plus now. It's great.
Oh, yeah, it is there. I mean, that first season is incredible. And you know what? I haven't seen the latest season.
Oh, season 3 is like, I would say, a more of a true sequel to season 1 than season 2 was. And season 3 is, I would say, on par with season 1 of like how good it is.
I just watched season 1.
I just watched season 1 for the very first time last month.
It's good, right?
It's good. It's good. I don't want to talk too much shit about it. I also don't want to praise it as much as people have talked about it. Because like, compared to anything modern, it is not great.
Yeah, the thing
it gets worse.
Yeah, the thing to remember is this is the first, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the first major Marvel TV show. And we expected it to be dog shit. And we went in there and we were like, this is genuinely pretty compelling. Over time, like, the MCU has, like, rapidly increased in quality to the point where the best that that they had done back then is kind of, like, mediocre these days.
Yeah, I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had come before Daredevil, and it was, like, kind of a paint-by-numbers weekly kind of TV show, and so Daredevil being the first thing to come after that, it was like, oh, this is... this is starting to get closer to the quality of, like, that we know of, like, MCU
Agents
and stuff like
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Agent, now on Disney Plus. You can watch all seven seasons of that show.
I remember watching, and there's an episode, there's a scene which made me stop watching. And it was the scene, there's a scene where, like, the main character, what's her name, Sky? Is that it? Something like that. But, like, she's standing next, it's the end of an episode, she's standing next to a pool, and the camera cuts to her, and they didn't edit out, she runs into the scene, they didn't edit out her starting from a stop. Like, it cuts to her, she's standing, and then she realizes she needs to go, and she runs into the scene. So you can go her see her from standing to running into the scene, and I was like, I'm done with this show, it's over. I like, done. It was so bad, that show. I don't care.
Love it.
Next story. GoldenEye video game trademark renewed amid remaster rumors. This comes from the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 video game website on the internet, GameSpot.com, written by Eddie McCooch. While still unconfirmed, the evidence for a new GoldenEye remaster continues to mount. VGC discovered, chat to VGC, that the GoldenEye trademark covering downloadable electronic game software was granted its second extension just this week. This alone does not necessarily mean anything, and trademarks are filed and extended by companies regularly, even when there are no plans to release a product. That may also be true here. But the GoldenEye trademark renewal for software specifically is intriguing, given that a HD remaster of the classic N64 game GoldenEye has been rumored for some time. VGC reported that the announcement of such a game might be delayed due to Russia's attacks against the Ukraine, given how GoldenEye's story involves Soviet Russia. In January, GoldenEye 007 achievements on Xbox leaked, which might be further evidence of an upcoming remaster. Fans may recall how a finished remaster of GoldenEye for Xbox 360 was ready to go until it was cancelled due to licensing issues. A GoldenEye remake for the Wii was released in 2010, but it featured Daniel Craig standing in for Pierce Brosnan. Absolutely heresy there. A reloaded edition for PS3 and Xbox 360 was released later. 2022 marks the 60th anniversary of the James Bond series. The company behind the franchise teased today that fans should watch out for announcements, events, and new content across 2022. A re-release of GoldenEye 007 could be amongst the surprise announcements, it seems, though nothing is confirmed at this stage. And then in other news, Hitman developer IO Interactive is still working on a James Bond game. Hell yeah. How you feel about GoldenEye potentially coming back? Are you sick of GoldenEye yet?
Well, I'm just kind of sick of talking about the rumors of it coming back, just because, like, I feel like at this point it's like, all right, it's gonna happen, just do it, like, just announce it, let's just have it happen. I don't think it's gonna be like a crazy from the ground up remake or anything. Like, it's gonna be a remaster, probably, just like the Perfect Dark one we got two generations ago at this point, when we know that they did the same thing for GoldenEye and ended up just not happening. So we'll see what this ends up shaking out to be, but I am way more excited for the new Bond game coming out. Like, hopefully that comes out in the next 2 years or so, because that sounds really damn cool. But yeah, definitely would love to get this out so we can move past it, because I do think that we should be able to play GoldenEye on modern consoles because of how pivotal and important it is. And it would be really fun to pop into some multiplayer just for a stream, you know, just to remember that and reminisce. Having said that, it's not going to hold up, and it's not what it used to be.
Yeah. So for the sake of preservation, great. I'm just going to say this separately, aside. Please be seating if you are very, very liable to be shocked and tilted by people saying true facts. That game sucks today, okay? A game is ass to play. It is not fun, okay? The only thing you're getting out of it is a small hit of nostalgia for 10 minutes. Leave GoldenEye in the past. It's poo-poo in 2022.
Counterpoint. Every song is a banger. So you can just turn that thing on. No matter how bad the game is, it's still worth playing, baby.
You can find all those songs on YouTube.com. It's easy.
That is awesome.
I am truly sick of the air in the universe being taken up by GoldenEye is back. It's like GoldenEye had its moment. It sucks now. There's a billion other shooters that are better. Just watch a video of it. You will get the same satisfaction from watching a video of it than you will spending money to play it one time on your Nintendo Switch or your whatever modern thing. You're going to be like, this sucks on a modern controller. It was designed to be played on the Nintendo 64's weird-ass boomerang thing.
And even playing it on the weird-ass boomerang
is not fun. It's not it was good. Annoying.
Yeah. Like, even, like,
it was annoying.
Said that, you could play with two in 64 controllers. That's true. And then that's it was dual analog.
Listen, if you care about GoldenEye 64, if you're out there and you're going to respond to this by saying, no, I care about GoldenEye 64. If you truly care about GoldenEye 64, find a CRT, find a Nintendo 64, play it on the cartridge the way that it was meant to be. Find your old friends that you played it with. You probably won't because they've moved on.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about GoldenEye, and you should do the same. If you really care about GoldenEye, do it the OG way.
You're so right, and you are absolutely correct. Having said that,
buy Elden Ring instead.
James Bond games, I really wish that we could recapture the magic of that type of multiplayer in a modern time where it's like way, way, way smaller arena style maps, but it is about the proximity mines and the gadgets and the fun of it all without going too overbearing with loadouts and all that stuff. But I just don't know if that works. Like, I can't even think of a price point. I can't even think of content that would make that worthwhile. But not just GoldenEye, like the memories I have of Nightfire on PS2. Oh my god, like it was just so much fun, that like time splitters type of first person shooters gameplay. Like, I would love to get that back, but having said that, it can't just be the same thing back. Like, it needs to be what we remember those games playing like. They need to make a new experience that gives us that kind of, you know, feeling.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think I had some of the most fun times in my life playing GoldenEye. I truly loved it. And there was like a kind of like remake project, a fan made one called GoldenEye Reloaded for a while, which was based on the Source engine.
Counter-Strike Source, right?
Yeah. And they like redid the music and everything. And I was like, I played a bunch of that as well. But yeah, I'm excited to leave GoldenEye, this specific version, in the past. And I am super, super excited for IO's GoldenEye project because they've been knocking it out of the park with Hitman. And if anyone can do a good GoldenEye game or a good Bond game, it's them. So very excited for that. Next story. Resident Evil live action series gets July release date on Netflix and new posters. This comes from GameSpot's very own Matt Elfring. Netflix's upcoming live action Resident Evil series finally has a release date. The 8 1-hour long episodes will be arriving on Netflix July 14th. Additionally, teaser posters for the upcoming show were released, and fans of the video games will catch the very obvious references to Umbrella Corporation and the T-Virus, the virus that turns people into zombies and monstrosities. The official synopsis reads, year 2036, 14 years after a deadly virus caused a global apocalypse, Jade Wesker fights for survival in a world overrun by bloodthirsty, infected, and insane creatures. In this absolute carnage, Jade Wesker is haunted by her past in New Raccoon City by her father's chilling connections to the Umbrella Corporation. New Raccoon Corporation. City! It's like New Donk City, but with zombies. But what happened to her sister? Billy Wesker! The fuck? That's right, the series follows the Wesker family. Lance Riddick of Oz, John Wick, Destiny, many other things, will play Albert Wesker. While other character names haven't been revealed as of this writing, the show also stars Ella Balinska from Charlie's Angels, Tamara Smart from Are You Afraid of the Dark, Sienna Agudong from Fast 9, The Fast Saga, Adeline Rudolph from Riverdale, and Paula Nunez from Bad Boys for Life. Andrew Dabb from Supernatural will serve as the showrunner. I do love Supernatural, but still. Jade Wesker, executive producer and writer. Mary Lee Sutton from Tell Me a Story, of Tell Me a Story, will write and executive produce alongside him. The Netflix live-action series wasn't the only live-action Resident Evil project in production. In the fall of 2021, a new film franchise launched with Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City, which, as we know, went swimmingly. Oh, wait, no. It was booty. The film led many to believe it would be more faithful to the first two games in the series. The movie only made $38 million globally, but it launched in the midst of a pandemic. Over on Metacritic, the film scored a 44 from 21 critics, so it's not very liked.
I saw that movie in theaters. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Mm-hmm. It was the promise of what gamers wanted. It's just, we're going to adapt it and we're going to just do it. We're going to do the games as a movie. And they did that with the costumes that look just like the games and the puzzles from the games and the choices you have to make from the games all shoved into one movie. Now, where did they go wrong besides doing exactly what I just said? They decided to also not just adapt one of the games, to adapt elements of three of the games and mash them all together in a way that made absolutely no sense. It was an atrocity. It was so fun to watch because there was one actor in the movie, and I'm not going to say which one because I don't want to show that much disrespect, but there is one actor that cares more about acting in that movie than I've seen any actor ever care about acting in any feature film of all time. And he's committed, just committed so hard. And it was sad because the movie didn't commit to him. You know, it did not give him his due. And it was a disaster. The entire thing was a damn disaster. Now, pairing that with this, cool. Let's go even more off the wall, off books. This is a far-fledged future that obviously isn't a future of the games or movies or anything that we've had before of Resident Evil. None of this looks great. Barrett, please bring that picture up again.
Remember when they like teased of like the cast reveal and all it was this image in that one like Netflix like stream or whatever, and it was so weird.
And so now we have context, right? Now, okay, cool. Let's look at this picture. What does it scream? Resident Evil. Oh, of course, right? Of course, we have the Wesker family. We have Billy Wesker and we have Jade Wesker. What the fuck is this, guys? What is this? Like, also, why is it a show? At least if it was a movie, it could be like, hey, here's 2 hours of dog shit. Now it's like, oh, man. And again, I haven't seen this. There's a chance that it's good. That's a lie. There's no chance. I'm over. What do you have to say about this, Tam?
I Jade Wesker is what I'm thinking. Jade Wesker. Yes. Like, how do you mystify the mysterious and conniving Albert Wesker? You give him a fucking The Simpsons family, like, of kids. Like, why? What? The thing I don't understand is, what kind of, I would love to see the contract that Capcom signed where they just seem to allow any Tom, Dick, and Harry to come along and just tear their Resident Evil franchise apart, as like the developers are like doing a pretty amazing job of like making great games and like revitalizing it in a lot of ways. You know, we had the RE2 remake, I would say one of the best games in a long, long time. RE, like, 6, 7, and 8 have been pretty amazing. They're doing genuine good. I mean, they're doing some weird shit as well, like fucking that weird multiplayer game, but like for the most part, a lot of good things happening in the Resident Evil franchise, which is being leveraged for like garbage. Like, I don't understand. What is this strategy? I really don't get it. It makes no sense to me. And I feel like some Hollywood executives got some real dirt on someone at Capcom to be like, we're going to shit on your Resident Evil franchise repeatedly from a number of different angles, and there's nothing that you can do about it. It's just like, holy shit, man. Just tighten up shop. Like CG movies that are bad, fucking live action movies that are bad, TV shows that are bad, just every bad opportunity to like kick Resident Evil in the dick while it's like trying its best, they're doing it.
I mean, I will say that the Welcome to Raccoon City movie, I'm pretty sure is now like hopefully free on some streaming service. But if you have even like an hour, if you have 20 minutes just to turn it on, just to see what it is, it legitimately is the opening live action scenes from the first game just turned into a movie. So it's like, there is very few things more faithful than what they did. It just wasn't good to begin with. And it definitely is not good in movie form. And I am willing to bet it will not be good in TV series form on Netflix with Lance Reddick as Wesker.
Yeah, what is that version of Wesker all about? Like, I don't understand it. I want to see, like, Lance Reddick as Albert Wesker telling his kids to go to their room and stuff like that. It's just, I don't understand. But it's just very, very strange. But let's move on. Remember, folks, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, Here's a word from our sponsors.
Shout out to DoorDash. Sometimes pulling into your driveway after a trip to the grocery store only to realize you forgot one key ingredient for dinner kind of feels like the end of the world. But with DoorDash, you can get the groceries and household essentials you need or a backup meal from your favorite local restaurant delivered in under an hour. Desperately craving a late night snack or just want to stock up for the week with DoorDash, get it all in one app. We've been using DoorDash forever. You hear us on the Kinda Funny podcast always talking about the different taquerias we're ordering from, the different burger places we're ordering from. We are super happy and we love to just get the food delivered right to us. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Kinda Funny. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Kinda Funny. Don't forget, that's code Kinda Funny for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. Shout out to MeUndies. We've all been there trying on clothes in a dressing room and everything makes you look like three kids hiding in a coat. Finding the perfect size is annoying. That's why MeUndies makes undies, bralettes, and loungewear to fit just right. Y'all know how long I've loved MeUndies. I am often wearing the shirt, the lounge pants, the undies, the socks, like I'm doing right now. If I was a cartoon character, this would just be my outfit. It would just be all MeUndies. I love it because of the soft micromodal fabric and because it does fit really well. MeUndies knows that comfort starts with the perfect size and fit. That's why they wear test all sizes from extra small to 4XL for everything they make. They've got different cuts for different butts and everything from bold colors to fun adventurous prints, so the world can be a comfier place for every booty. MeUndies promises if you're not comfortable with any product for any reason, you can return your order for a full refund within 45 days. MeUndies has a great offer for y'all. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off and free shipping right to your door. To get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
Tim, it's going to be a few months until we get the hot new Resident Evil TV show, but where would I go to get the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show? Oh, wait, no, I fucked that up completely.
You would go to
I was like, wait, no, I'm the host, not the co-host.
You know where to go.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, wait, no, I'm supposed to not be saying that. That's Tim's thing. Listen, Tim, where would I go if I wanted to buy Elden Ring?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Thank you very much. I'm telling you, every moment in between a thought, Elden Ring appears. Sometimes I worry it won't go away. Like, it's just going to be there forever. And I love it. But here we are. Out today, we have Dark Deity for Switch, Shredders, which you'll be able to see very soon on Kind of Funny, for Xbox Series X and S and PC. Persona 4 Arena Ultimax for PS4, Switch, PC. Good game. Galgun Double Piece for Switch. Monster Energy Supercross 5 for PS5, 4, Xbox X, okay. S, Xbox One. They got five of those games, baby. Anno Mutationum.
Wow.
PS5, PS4, PC. Curious Expedition 2, PS4, Xbox One. WRC 10 for Switch. Owned for PC. I don't know what that means. This Means Warp for PC. New dates. Chinatown Detective Agency is coming April 7th, and Sniper Elite 5 is coming on May 26th, 2022. Few deals of the day. Streets of Rage 4 is $14.99 on the US eShop, and today is also the last day to get the bundle for Ukraine for $10 on itch.io. That includes almost 1,000 items and games, a lot of games in there, and all, it's all DRM-free, and obviously you get to support a good cause. Reader Mail, I looked at Reader Mail earlier, and there was nothing in there, and it doesn't look like there is anything in there again. People are just not interested in sending email to, read an email to me when I'm here. Upsetting scenes. What have I done to you? What have I done to you, huh? And there's no squad up either. Let's check out You're Wrong. I don't think there's going to be anything in there.
Oh, Timmy Buddy,
there's one thing in there.
Timmy Buddy says, "Welcome to Raccoon City is not on any streaming service. You have to pay $5.99 to rent it or $19.99 to buy it digitally." And I can for sure say it is not worth either of those prices for that film. No. No, no, no.
No?
Do not do that. No.
No?
No.
Just wait until it goes for free. Or, like, if you see someone watching it as you pass by their house, just peek through the window. Actually, no, don't do that. That will get you in trouble.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't. Nope. Nope.
Tim, I've done it again. I've finished the show with 10 minutes to spare. You know what that means. Now we get to goof off. Now we get to hang out. Mm-hmm. How are you getting on with video games? This is what I want to know.
Pretty well, pretty well. Most of the things I'm excited to talk about playing, I can't talk about playing. You know what I'm talking about? All that embargoes and shit. But next week, wink, wink, nod, nod, you're going to want to check out Gamescast for some fun stuff. But yeah, it's been a good time for video games, I'll say that.
Have you started Final Fantasy Origins Stranger of Paradise, Tim?
I've not had the luxury of trying to kill chaos quite yet. But I'm very excited for that. But that is also one of those games that I have a feeling I'm going to drop off of quickly. Because as amusing as it is, I don't think the gameplay is going to hook me enough. But I can't wait to watch the streams of people playing like the disastrously bad dialogue, which, again, is so awesome. I feel like that is the best part of the
charm. I've got it downloaded because, and this is like rare for me to like really like try out like a, especially like a Final Fantasy like spin-off game almost, right? Just because of like all of the memes that have been coming out on Twitter about it. And I've heard good things about the gameplay. Like it's the developers of Neo. And that was like before I was like really had any interest in like Souls-like games, but I did remember enjoying at least the combat with Neo. So if I think it's definitely different from the combat of Neo, but it's the same developer. So like you know that the gameplay is probably going to be good, and so I want it for that mix of just like total just what the fuck story and just like all right, we're playing a fun game here.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't vibe with Neo, so that's why I'm a little hesitant about it.
My favorite thing about them is like they clearly started making a Final Fantasy game and then at some point went, this combat is great. How do we make sure people get into this combat as quickly and frequently as possible? And then someone went, well, if we just cut out all the Final Fantasy stuff. And then that's the game that they have made where it's like someone will tell you, go to the king and speak to the king so that you have permission to go and save the lands and fight these monsters. And you're like, okay, now I'm going to run through this town in classic Final Fantasy fashion and go to the king. And then like a smash cuts to you talking to the king. And you're like, what? What happened? And it's like, oh, now's the time in the game, Final Fantasy game, where you speak to a bunch of people in the town and get their opinions on things. And you're like, okay, I'm ready to talk to a lot of people, and a menu comes up and you just select their names one by one through the thing and they just give you like some text and then you move on with your life and you're like, oh, they really streamlined the shit out of this and like took it out of a lot of the Final Fantasy stuff out of it, so you would just play the game, which I'm like fascinated to see how that comes together. It's very exciting, and also like bad dialogue is everything for me. Like this could truly be the video game version of The Room, finally. Like, this is the game that could be that. Yeah,
we've achieved peak greatness, everybody. Yeah, we've done
finally.
It.
Finally, yeah. Everyone's trying to be the Shawshank Redemption of video games. No, we should be being The Room of video games, okay? True culture. Yeah. High art. Yeah.
I will say I played the demo, and I played a little bit past the demo. I had the preview event for Kirby and the Forgotten Land, and there's a similar energy to that game. But I think it's backed up more so by like the great platforming and stuff. But there is a weirdness to Kirby that I can't wait for everybody to really kind of wrap their heads around. Because in the opening bits of the game, you get cutscenes and they are just like the Kingdom Hearts trailers without sound effects. There aren't sound effects and things are just happening and it is so awkward. But that in a game whose primary feature is mouthful mode, somehow it's like they doubled down on this weirdness and it's just fucking working for me and I can't wait to keep playing it.
I will never get over mouthful mode, like never in my life. Tim, have you played Tunic?
Not yet.
Are you going to? Because that is a Tim game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, dude, visually it's great. Andy was hyping me up on it. I was listening to the Gamescast review and I'm like, oh shit,
it's a little Zelda game, mate. It's a little Zelda game for you. Yeah, I started playing it yesterday and it's a really, really interesting game. My favorite thing about it, I don't think it's spoilers, and I'm sure they have mentioned it before, is a little instruction manual that you get.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's so, because like you can zoom in on the little pictures of the fox, so and it does good. That thing where in the, you know, in the Mario manual, they had like illustrations of him like jumping on the turtle. You have that same one, and like I looked at it and I was like, this artwork is adorable, and like I would buy prints of it. I'm like 2 hours in, I'm not super sold on the game, I'm not falling in love, but I would like buy t-shirts of that little lad with his, when he runs or when they run, like his little tuft of hair flaps about
as
he
runs.
It's so cute.
That is the best, man. Back in the day, I was addicted to instruction manuals, and it's because they always had like really cool, unique art. And this was like before you could just Google image anything, because it didn't exist. But like, I remember getting the Mario All-Stars cartridge, which is my first video game I ever owned, and I am the luckiest human being in the world because of that. Can you imagine just that treasure trove where it's like, hey, here's your first video game. Mario 1, Mario 2, the other Mario 2, Mario 3. Oh, it was Mario All-Stars plus World. I'm a lucky little lad. But the instruction manual had illustrations from all the different games of Mario and a bunch of different like power-ups. I remember looking through it before I had beaten the games and being like, this motherfucker turns into a frog and a raccoon. And I'm like, I was just blown away by all of it. So that's so cool that Tunic did that.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig more into it once
Have you gotten to a boss fight yet, Tim?
So I fought the first boss.
Okay.
I did that thing. So I know a lot of people, it's very hands-off, and a lot of people have like realized that they were fighting the first boss having not gotten the sword. So they're just trying to fight that boss with a stick. And I was like, God damn. Like, people were doing
that. And that's the cool thing of like how it's hands-off with like the instruction booklet is like, it is kind of a core part of the game of like learning the secrets and like the, oh, like I should have a sword at this point and stuff like that. That's really cool. My one thing with it so far, I'm like I got to the third boss yesterday and I put it down. Is that I'm having this weird disconnect because people have been talking about like, oh, it's like kind of Soulsy 2D Zelda like, right? And I definitely do see that. But the thing with like Zelda bosses, especially in like a 2D landscape, is that like a lot of like dungeons or areas surrounding a boss kind of like teach you and like give you a language of like what to expect from the boss. And I don't see that a lot here, and that's, like, the weird disconnect I'm having with it so far, where it's, like, when I get to a boss, I'm like, oh, these are aspects of it that, like, these are aspects that I learned from, like, the last hour or so. Like, I think that's where people are coming at with, like, the kind of Soulsy experience, where it's like, oh, you got to, like, learn this boss when you get to it and not in the buildup. And, like, as a kind of Zelda-inspired game, that's kind of, like, I don't know how I feel about that. I think the bosses in and of themselves are like really fun. Like I got through the first couple on like first tries and they were like really dope in and of itself in like an isolated instance. But like that's got to sit with me a little bit of like, do I think these two design ideas clash too much? But that's my only gripe so far. It's a really beautiful and really charming game. And again, I love that instruction booklet.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig into more of it, and I'm sure, Tim, you'll enjoy it
too. Some more?
Mm-hmm. Like, what did you say?
I'd say your name.
Okay, I'm gonna dig into it tomorrow, and I'm gonna dig into it tomorrow.
Yeah,
there you go. Tomorrow's hosts are Greg and Bless. And if you're watching live on Twitch right now, after this, we will be playing Shredders. It's a snowboarding game. The devs are going to be involved, and there's going to be one snow bicycle, shredding the gnaw, as he says. I hope he tells some of his stories about snowboarding or like doing weird winter sports, because it's always funny to me.
Yep.
If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Head over there, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell button. I don't know. Do all the
something
stuff. Do something over there. Just click various things and see what happens. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through all the most important nerdy news you need to know about to feel good about yourself and your hobbies, you know. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. If you're not, go over there and sub.
Do some shit.
Easy. If you can, do it. Stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, laugh and grow fat.